Hi, this is James White once again for the Solution Series, brought to you by Corey's Digs and Solari.com. And we're going to have a really good show today, folks. I think just you're going to get a lot of great information today. And of course, we're always joined by my co-host, Corey Lynn. Corey, always great to see you.
Good to be here.
Good to be here
We're gonna
indeed.
learn some good stuff today. I have a feeling.
We are going to learn some good stuff, and it's so timely because, the way that things are going on right now that you see in the news and personal protection, I think, and situational awareness is really important. And sadly, we see seemingly every day these videos of mobs showing up and these type of things going on and beating people down. And we don't curse, of course, we are 100% against that here on Solution Series. And there's ways to avoid that, and there's ways to mitigate those risks, and there's ways to protect your home, even when you're in your vehicle. So that's what we're going to be talking about today. And our guest today is Richard Murford, and I hope I said that right. Richard Murford, he's a former Special Operations 75th Ranger Regiment. He currently works as an executive protection and a field instructor for EP High Threat Security Operations. Richard, thanks so much for joining us here on the Solution Series.
Hey, I appreciate you having me. Really excited to talk about some of this stuff. It's always been super interesting to me. It's why I dedicated my life to it. So very happy to be here. Thank you.
Oh, you're quite welcome. Quite welcome. Okay, so let's we just have to face the realities of the world right now. Of course, when I was younger, and all of us were younger, I think you're probably younger than Corey and I, Richard. At least you appear to be. Nonetheless, when we were younger, even at your age, things seemed a little more safer. You could, when I was young, I could really kind of go outside and be gone all day, and there was no really issues. Today, it's not like that. There seems to be a heightened level of aggression, and we see it often on videos. This is the time, I think, Richard, to be prepared. I'm not saying you have to, pump up and be Iron Man, but it's just a matter of mentally getting yourself in a position to realize where there could be some threats and how you can assess those threats. And as you stated in the pre-interview, it's always best to avoid those situations whenever you can. Sometimes you can't. So we're going to talk about those type of things. We're going to talk about firearms today, what a good first firearm would be, some stuff you can do at your home to sort of keep, people that may want to do you harm out of your home, or at least, protect your home. So with that as a backdrop, Richard, why don't you go ahead and give us a little bit of a background on yourself, a little bit. Tell us, I know you do the personal protection. Just expand on that a little bit, because it's pretty cool stuff. I mean, some of the places you fly to, I think when I talked to you before, you just flown back from somewhere protecting a dignitary, and I mean some exotic places, and I think that's pretty interesting. So if you could just expand on that a little bit, and then just kick it off with, I think, firearm. Corey, do you think that's a good place to start, about the best firearm to start with?
Yeah, I think that would be a great place to start. And then I also want to talk about, with traveling and in the cars and hitting the road and that type of stuff too. So yeah.
Right on, Richard. With that as a backdrop, go ahead. I'll just turn it over to you.
Yeah, so a little bit about my background. I did start in the military. I joined when I was 17, so I got in pretty quick. Went to the 75th Ranger Regiment. I spent my time in there, the whole time I was in 1st Ranger Battalion as an infantryman. I ended up getting injured and medically retired because of a back break. So I had a lot going on there, and that led to me leaving there and starting college at Ohio State University, where I'm finishing my degree right now, in intelligence. And so after that, I didn't know what to do with myself, and I didn't want to go to college right off the rip at first. I knew that I had a background in the military, and especially in the special operations career field, which opens a lot of doors in a lot of ways. And so I went to a course myself. I went through a course on executive protection and high threat security operations, which I was familiar with through the 75th Ranger Regiment anyway. And that led me to becoming an instructor and working in the career field. And so this recent, like you said, I just got back. I was in Bahrain in India, not with a dignitary this time. This time I was with a band. So right now I'm doing protection for bands. So I go on and off with the lead, obviously the leads or the entire band, depending on what they're paying for. And that's a great job. I have a blast with it. You travel a lot of places. It's also a job. So it seems like it's a lot of fun because you're going to these different places and seeing a lot of things. But at the same time, it's a job, and you're there to do that job. So The second you take yourself away from that, the second there's an issue. So you got to see
So
it from that light.
that pause you for a second, Richard, because this comes to my mind. You're the guys that when there's like a high value target there and they're shaking hands and everybody's clapping at them, you're the guy that's like not looking at the high value target. You're scanning the audience, you're scanning the crowd looking for threats, and you seem like you're detached from the whole fanfare and you just got your eyes focused on the crowd. And is that kind of the role that you play when you do those things?
Yeah, in a way, and especially in today's world, there's that saying out there that you'll catch more flies with honey than you will vinegar. And so a lot of times, we try to transition from that general mindset where you kind of detach from everything and you kind of look angry, where we're still doing that job, we're still scanning, and I'm that type of guy where you probably see it through this whole interview. I smile a lot, so we're trying to put on nowadays, that's the impression we give because it's who we are. We want to be those people who we look friendly. We look like we're normal people. You almost couldn't pick us out of a crowd. And that's the best way, I think, to do that job, if that makes sense, to almost not be there until you need to be there. But yeah, you're absolutely right. That's pretty much what we're doing.
Right on. Sorry to interrupt. Please continue.
Oh, no worries. Absolutely. And so, that kind of, like you said, it pushes on into the firearm situation, what firearm someone would choose. And I always say I said this in the re response. It's shooter preference in a lot of ways, and by that I mean it depends on what you're going to need that firearm for. If you're looking to, hunt big animals like moose or elk or something like that, and drop them 400, 800 yards, something where it's a hunting long range platform, you're looking for a rifle. You're not gonna pull out a 9mm pistol and take a 400, 800 meter shot on an elk and expect to do anything with that. That won't happen, So, it depends on the purpose, but in the self-defense world. There's a lot of opinion on it, and by no means am I an expert. Don't get me wrong. I'm one of the younger guys in the game. I've just dedicated a lot of time to it. It's what I'm committed to. In my opinion, in the self-defense world, you're probably going to want a pistol, and there's a lot of reasons for that. One of them is concealability, right? So you want to be able to keep this weapon on you, but not let everybody know you have a weapon on you, because if everybody knows you have a weapon on you're probably the first person they're going to go for if they're trying to cause trouble, right? They're either going to look to take that weapon or harm you, so you can't use that weapon. So you always want to have that element of surprise. It's one of the three things you want in CQB, which is funny. It's a fundamental part of CQB in the military: speed, surprise, and violence of action. You really need one of those, mostly two at least, to survive or to win that gunfight. But you really want surprise so that the person that's trying to harm you or the situation you're in, you don't have to reveal that you have a weapon until the last second when you're able to use it, if that makes sense.
Sure,
And
of
for that
course.
reason, it's a good reason to choose a pistol. Another reason is that a pistol is used for close range, right? It's usually used for engagements within 50 meters, I would say. Not to say you can't shoot at 100 meters and engage accurately with a pistol. If you know what you're doing, you absolutely can. But most engagements, and there's a lot of statistical data on this, but the one that I often refer to is the FBI LEOCA, which is the Law Enforcement Officers Killed and Assaulted Report. I think I quoted it in the questionnaire. It's from 2012 to 2019. And what it states is basically most engagements happen within that 3 to 15 yard range, with the majority happening under 10 yards. So you're going to find it really hard to conceal and then draw a rifle and engage somebody within 3 yards. Right, so that's where a pistol comes in handy. And in my opinion, one of the best pistols that bridges both gaps. And there's a lot of debate on the rounds. There's a lot of statistical data on every round that anybody can go into and look up and obviously carry what's best for you. But in my opinion, I think the 9mm pistol is one of the better pistols you can purchase for self-defense.
So let me distinguish if I can, and you maybe don't think they need to be differentiated, but what about you're talking about self-defense if you're out in the public. How about in your own home? I've often heard that a shotgun is the best weapon to have, the best gun to have in your home for home defense because of the versatility of the shotgun. Would you oppose that? Would you oppose that thought?
Oh, I wouldn't oppose that at all. As long as, it always goes back to what I say is a situational awareness, right? If a shotgun is a perfect tool, especially for home defense, because especially if you have a semi-automatic shotgun, something that carries a larger load round in the tube, and especially if you're carrying rounds that pack a wallop, right? It does a huge amount of damage that a lot of pistols can't. The issue you would run into with that, in my opinion, is if you're not situationally aware and you put a couple slugs through somebody and it goes through a wall, right? What's behind that wall? Could there be somebody in your family that's behind that wall? Could there, so collateral damage is a consideration always. That being said, if you're familiar, if you run drills in your house, if you if you're familiar with the area, when you could shoot and when you can't. I wouldn't tell anybody not to use a shotgun. It's such a powerful tool that it is a shot or a tool that I would recommend to have a shotgun myself. That being said, I don't sleep with a shotgun, next to my bed with a flashlight on it. My shotgun's usually under the bed or it's in another room in a corner. But I always have a weapon accessible, and that would be my 9mm pistol with a flashlight ready to go at night, if that makes sense. And there are rounds you can purchase for a 9mm pistol. Hornady critical duty rounds make them. So what they do is that they're made so that they're not extremely frangible, so they don't travel. Once they impact and typically try to stay in the target, if that makes sense, for an easy way to say it. Instead of that going through the target, it hits with enough impact to stick into the target. And the 9mm also offers a large round capacity. So most 9mm offer anywhere from 15 to 20 plus rounds in a magazine, depending on how large the pistol's going to be.
And depending on what state you live in and what you're allowed.
Right,
They're
absolutely.
getting
That
pretty
is a
crazy with that.
consideration. Yeah, that's a consideration. Some states, I mean, if they're going to limit your rounds to a certain amount, no matter what the caliber, then obviously, in my opinion, at that distance, I'd go with a larger caliber, or at least one that I can control accurately. That's another drawback is, if you're a smaller person, smaller hands, maybe you can't control the kickback of a 45 as accurately as you can a 9mm or a 40, if that makes sense.
Right. Well, that actually brings up a question. So there are some states where going from one county to the next county, you can have 10 rounds in one and 15 rounds in another. And then the same with if you're traveling and you're going from state to state. So I always wondered, what do you do in a situation like that if you're traveling or you're going to go stay in another state for a month and now you've only got the one gun that, maybe carries 15 rounds or whatever type of gun it is, that now all of a sudden that state's banned. I mean, trying to keep up with all of this is pretty crazy. So how do you manage that part of it?
The ATF is coming out with bans on, certain stocks on pistols and all kinds of stuff. So, really, I understand completely. It's very hard to keep up with this. I always say the best rule of thumb is to abide by the law as much as you're willing to. Now, that might sound crazy to say to the general public, but it's a reality. At some point, you have to do what's best for you, what's going to protect you. So abide by the law as much as you're willing to. You try to keep up with the law and stay out of trouble, because if you get caught with certain things, like you said, it's very easy for them to flip the switch from one county to another, and next thing you know, you're a felon. And so
Right.
stick to the law as much as you can. Always have backup. If the law is that you can only have 10 rounds in the weapon in a magazine, carry a bunch of magazines with 10 rounds in them. You might have to get really good at mag changes if that's what you're only willing to do, right?
Right.
Or you could always carry a bag with more rounds in it. It comes down to what you're willing to do and what you see as your personal right and your personal freedom. I'm not encouraging anybody to do that, please. I hope you don't get me wrong, but I will say that at some point you have to decide how much you're willing to take and then how much you're willing to not take, if that makes sense.
Yep, absolutely.
Well, without getting into an argument here, not argument, discussion. We have certain constitutional rights to self-protection, and that those are not government didn't give us those rights, so they can't prohibit those rights. And that's my view on things, but that's a
Absolutely.
probably a whole nother solution series. Right there we go, right there. Maybe that's go over that.
I'm in agreement here.
okay,
Me
so
too.
let's talk if we can about mitigating that risk. So how about let's do this? Let's start on the outside and then we'll move ourselves into the home. So you're outside, you go out with your significant other, you go out to do a ball game or to dinner or to a movie or something, and something happens while you're in the movie and you don't realize that there's some unrest when you come out and you're driving your normal way home, you stop at a light. And next thing you know, some people are kind of coming up, been crowding around the car. We've all seen the scenes. You get out of the car, you see people that get out of the car. Doesn't end well for those folks typically. But people are hanging over your car. I mean, who really has the? It's kind of hard just to run over folks. Who wants to be responsible for harm doing that? I mean, having that on their head. So it's a really bad situation to be in. And we hope that no one in this viewing audience ever gets in that situation, but we have to sort of at least speak about it. So if we could talk about that, and again, we'll just start on the outside, coming after shopping at the mall when you come out, if it's dark, How do you assess the environment to make sure that you're, especially if you're a female, walking into a trap or something? So let's see if we can start outside for, personal awareness or situational awareness, and then we'll move into the home and talk about how to guard the home. Does that sound okay with you, Richard?
Yeah, absolutely.
Great. Corey, you on board with that?
Yep, sounds good to me.
Excellent. Okay, I'll just turn it over to you, Richard. Let's just do that very situation. If you're in your vehicle, let's start with the vehicle. So there's a lot of safety in a vehicle. It's a pretty heavy, powerful, piece of machinery if used that way. Again, we don't want to harm people. We're not advocating that. We never want to see someone get injured by a vehicle or any other way. But inevitably, this is going to happen at some point or another. So
Right.
let's talk about what we would do, Richard, if you don't mind, in that situation.
Yeah, absolutely. And first off, I don't want to armchair quarterback, or I can say what I would do in that situation, but I'm not in that situation right now. But there are things that you can do to keep yourself safe in that situation. And first off, is when we think about the vehicle, when we're talking about a vehicle, we have a saying that motionless operators ventilate easily. What that means is if you stand still, if you're standing still too long on the range, or if you're in a vehicle that's not moving and you allow your vehicle to get knocked down, or you get out of your vehicle, in most cases, you're going to get more holes to breathe out of. Motionless operators ventilate easily. And so mobility is what we call survivability. You have to have the ability to get off of the X. In the military, if you drive into an ambush, we call that the X, right? The X spot is where they want to kill you. That's where they're hurting you. You need to get out of that area. So the same thing for this situation. Ideally, if I can see this, say I'm driving up and I see the riot in front of me, then I'm going to back out, right? You should always back out. Don't put yourself in a situation where something bad could happen, right? If you're the person who has a whole street block before you drive into that and all the room in the world to back up and you still drive into that, you're putting yourself and your family or whoever's with you in that situation. Always get away from it if you can. Avoid that conflict unless it's absolutely necessary. So in the instance, right, we're sitting at that light, at that stop sign, and all of a sudden a bunch of people run around us and they surround the car. You need to take in consideration imminent danger. What I call imminent danger is life, limb, or eyesight. If there's a threat to my life, limb, or eyesight, or the mobility of my vehicle, which to me would be imminent danger, right? If they're about to pop my tires, if they're breaking your windows, if they're doing anything violent whatsoever, as much as we don't want to harm somebody, and it's awful to talk about, right? It's terrible to do. But if I beep that horn, if I'm not rolling my window down, these are things to consider too. We're not unlocking our doors. We're not trying to have a conversation with these people because they don't want to hear what you have to say. We've seen it time and again. It's not worth the risk. We call it breaking the seal, right? You never want to break the seal on a vehicle, especially if you have a VIP or a client in the car, in this case, your family or whoever. As soon as you break that seal, you open that vehicle up to people, whether they're throwing a cup of bleach in your face or whether they're dragging you out of the vehicle now because you unlocked the doors because you think they wanted to talk. You've put yourself in a dangerous situation. So never break the seal. That's a solid key rule. Never break the seal. If you think that your life is in danger, that these people are going to harm you in any way, they've already made that decision. They were the ones who decided to come out and to do harm to people, to break vehicles, to threaten you, to stab your tires, to do whatever it is that they're going to do. And as unfortunate as it is, you have to make a decision. Is it your life or is it theirs? Right? And it's crazy to say, but again, if I've taken all the steps, I've beeped my horn, I've warned them, they won't get out of the way, they're intending me harm, right? Then I have to decide, am I going to let them harm me and my family or my girlfriend or whoever I'm with that just came from the movie? Or am I going to get out of here safely? Right? I can't. There's a thing in the military we talk about and in the real world that happens often. It's called paralysis by overanalyzation, right? Where you're trying to analyze it and you're trying to do the right thing and you get scared. You don't want to hurt somebody. You don't want to do right, but you're thinking so long that it's too late. Well, now they've flattened your tires and now they've busted your window and they're dragging you out. So you have to be willing to act, but you take those necessary steps, you beep the horn, you warn them. They don't get out of your way and they're threatening you and yours. That's your decision to make. But I can tell you in this instance for me, I would drive through whoever was in my way until I'm to safety.
So you brought up a point earlier about practicing, like for example, practicing a fire a situation where the with your family an escape plan. You do that enough times, it becomes reflexive. Then there isn't that situational paralysis that you're talking about, right? Now,
Absolutely.
I'm not suggesting that you go out and run over people, to practice. Of course, I'm not
Right.
suggesting. Silly, but I mean, just in your mind, at least think about what you would do mentally, right? Mentally do that exercise, and then when we get into the home, we can talk about doing drills with your family and that type of stuff. But yeah, so Never get out of your vehicle. And would you call it never break the seal? Is that the term?
Never break the seal. Yep. That means don't open anything in the vehicle to access them, right? We don't open the windows. We don't open the doors. We don't unlock anything. We don't give them access to our vehicle.
Yeah, it's really important because I can tell you from firsthand experience, paralysis is a real thing. And people always think it cracks me up. They'll be watching a movie or something, or they'll see some video and they'll go, "Well, I would have done this," or "Why didn't they do that?" And they think they know what they're going to do and how they're going to react in a situation. But until you're actually confronted with it, you almost go into this state of shock because you've never been in that situation before. So you're just like shocked and you're waiting for the brain to kick in and tell you which way to go, what to do. So it is important to think about these things in advance and at least kind of have that knowledge in the back of your mind, and then maybe the reflexes will kick in quicker.
No, absolutely. And like he said before, being able to run drills. So, my girlfriend and I, when I teach courses, one of the things we do is we teach people to get through a situation like this where you've been stopped at a roadblock where you can't get through, and then somebody draws a firearm. And then you have to engage them through a windshield and learn how to navigate that while making sure you're not harming anybody else, while also making sure you're not sending glass into your own eyes. So, one of the rules I always have is wear eye pro when you're in a vehicle. Right, we always have sunglasses or some form of eye protection when we're in a vehicle, especially if we're going to be traveling in a city or something like that, just for a situation where if somebody sent something through glass or we sent something out of glass, we weren't going to
That's
end up with
smart.
glass in our eyes. But drills like, especially with the family, get your head down in a vehicle. If we're going to drive through something or if something's happening, put your head down. The more you train for things like this, like you said, the less that shock. We think of it from a timeline, right? And if this is the space of, oh, this is how long it's going to take me to react. Well, now I've trained it 1,000 times. Well, now it takes me that much more time or less time to react. Well, then I train it, 10,000 times. Well, now I'm here. It takes a lot less time to react. And so, training is invaluable in that way. We can't always train. I can't stand in front of somebody and get in a gunfight with them, right? We can't train that way. Otherwise, people would die, and it would be worthless training, right? It'd be one lesson.
No, but
In
you
that
could do like
sense,
paintballs.
exactly. We can
Yeah.
simulate as much as possible to give
Right.
them that so that when it really happens, if they do have that shock situation, which they will, it mitigates that time for them to react, which in many cases will save their life. There's a saying that I have on the range that I teach guys, and it's milliseconds in a gunfight is life and death because that's how quick bullets travel, right? I mean, they're maybe not exactly in that millisecond form, but they're very fast, if that makes sense. And so you only have that much time to react. And so it's like you said, it's very important to drill stuff like this. And when we get into the house, that's another important thing to do is drill things like this so they know how to react to this and they don't freeze.
But before we get into the house, since we're already in the vehicle, can we just expand on, let's just say, and let's hope we're never in this situation, but you know what? People have been in this situation where they're facing hurricanes and all of a sudden an entire town has to get out and they're all backed up in traffic. So let's just say, some events go down somewhere, whether it's natural disaster or it's terrorist acts. And people do need to round up their things and they need to travel, say, from one state to another. Do they want back roads? Do they want highways? Do they, avoid the cities? Like and what do you want to bring with you to have in that vehicle?
I mean, absolutely fantastic question. Again, I don't claim to be the expert on this, but I know, in my opinion, what most people should do is at least have, if for any situation, you should at least, at the very least, have a 3-day kit, right? And that's food, survival supplies, ways to start fires, right? Primitive ways to survive if you need to, iodine tablets to purify water. You should know how to purify water, right? You should know how to boil water. You should, all these things should be things you know, but it helps to have tools like iodine tablets, little things that aren't heavy, right? Always pack light if you can. You don't want to pack heavy because the heavier things are, the more it costs, right? The cost on your body, especially for the physicality of carrying, 35 pounds over 12 miles is a big deal. So if that's something you end up having to do, consider carrying light stuff. You always want to take, in my opinion, the road that less people are going to be on, right? And then in some ways that, again, it does open you up to danger, but I think less danger than you would have if you're taking in the big city. When things go bad in the big city, right? We all saw what happened during the pandemic. We all saw how people reacted over toilet paper, right? There's videos out there of people beating each other up, people darn near killing each other over toilet paper. We
Right.
all know what they're going to do if they don't have food for their kids, if they're starving, right? You want to avoid those areas. You certainly don't want to be in those areas. There's going to be a lot of bad actors, and in a lot of cases, not bad actors, but people who are just trying to survive and are willing to do whatever it takes. And when you go to those third world countries and you interact in those areas, you see that. You see people that are willing to do things no matter what it takes to survive. And so you realize really quick that's exactly what will happen here if it goes to that. So you want to avoid the cities, you want to take back roads, but you want to be familiar with these routes prior to. When we do executive protection, when we're taking a client somewhere, when we know ahead of time that the client wants to go to this location, we'll do what's called a route analysis and route mapping. So we analyze the route that he wants to take, and then we take a primary, a secondary, and a tertiary, three separate routes besides that that are on the way. And then what we do is we select places along those routes that if we were in trouble, we could stop at, we could use for a safe place or a hard point. And all the way along that route, we annotate those locations. So for those three separate routes on each one, we're going to locate where maybe a police department is. We're going to locate where the nearest trauma level one facility is, how far it is from us, the route to that. All these little things might seem like they take time, but in the long run, they could save your life. So it's important to spend time. It might take you a day. Nowadays you can pull up Google Maps and you can draw on it. You can just take a picture of your location and say maybe the first point you're going to is this point, and you can draw these three separate locations in different colors, snap it, print it out, and now you have a GRG, a little grid of where you're going and what's annotated there, so that you don't even need a phone, because in these instances you probably won't have one. So it's best to have it on paper. You can have a backup obviously digitally, but it's best to have all this stuff on paper as well, if that makes sense. Personally, I would laminate.
I'm fascinated that all that stuff goes into just so when you see a dignitary driving down the street in the limousine with the flags on his car, there's a whole bunch of stuff that sounds like that goes on before you see that scene that's always depicted on the news or whatever, when he's waving out the
Oh
window.
yeah.
That
There
there's
has been Oh, my apologies.
no, go ahead. No, I think you're on track.
There's typically been days of surveillance prior to that, right? Especially for somebody that's really important. You have not just that, you have an advance team. You have a group of people that have already gone, they've driven that route multiple days. They've noticed what the flow of traffic is normally like, what the best route is. They've annotated all these locations where bad things could happen, places where you need to pay attention. They've gone to the place that you're going and they checked it out. They've scanned it. They've made sure there's no threats there, whether it be explosive threats, chemical threats, biological, radiological, whatever it is. There's already been a whole behind the scenes. The show has been going on before the lights came onto the stage, if that makes sense.
Fascinating stuff. And while you're in your car for safety, if you think that you're in peril, you don't want to take the same route at home to your house every day. Is that correct? Don't you want to try to switch things up? If you even have an inkling
Absolutely.
that there's some maybe danger, you don't want to be routine, I guess is probably what I'm trying to get at. Is that accurate?
So ideally, even in your normal everyday life, you're absolutely accurate. You don't want to have the same pattern, right? If you go to the same coffee place every morning, you take the same route to drop your kids off to school, you do this the same way all your life, right? You're creating what's called a pattern of life. And if I'm somebody who's watching you or somebody who wants to get you are making it extremely easy for me to predict where you're going to be, when you're going to be there, why you're going to be there, how long you're going to be there. All of these things give me an advantage over you so that I have that element we talked about earlier, surprise, and you have less time to react. And so we always want to be unpredictable in our movements. Nowadays, if you know anything about phone technology, I had to learn this because I'm what you call technologically challenged. I had to learn this from a course, but your phones create patterns of life for you. When you give Google location stuff like that, imagine a map of your life, I'm sure as you know. And it's got a really thick highlighted line for where you're traveling all the time and little lines that might be here and there for the offshoots. But they can predict where you're going to be pretty accurately almost any given day of the
Over
week because of
90%,
that.
over 90%,
Absolutely.
93%, I think. That was a few years ago.
Absolutely. And that's terrifying. Now, just imagine that's how easy it is for somebody on the street if they decide they want to harm you to do that. So especially if you think somebody is after you, what we do is we select different routes every day. And then if we think someone's following us, there's a list of things we can do to kind of predict that without letting them know and with letting them know. We call them surveillance detection routes. So it's just little things you can do to, hey, I think this guy's following me. Now, how do I react? One of the best ones I found, and it works really well, especially when I'm training students and they think they're going to follow me. Some of them are good. Don't get me wrong. I'm not that great, but there's a little trick that I use and it gets them every time if they don't know about it. It's called the green light method. You stop at a green light when they're right behind you and you watch the reaction. What do most people do if you're at a green light and they're behind you? They're gonna honk that horn. Yeah, they're gonna
All
honk
right.
that. What the heck? You know, they're cussing you out and everything. And invariably, the guy that's following you doesn't want to draw attention to themselves, so they freeze. You see that moment where they're like, what do I do? And you go, yep, I got you.
Right on,
That's
right on.
funny.
That is funny. That's good stuff. I like that. Anyway, yeah.
Yep.
So that's that. Okay. So we're still sticking on the outside. So this is probably as I in the lead-in, as I stated, probably more for females, and taking nothing away from females, but you know, men prey on females more than they prey on men. I mean, they just have to talk about the facts. So let's say it's late at night in the wintertime and it gets dark 5, 5, 6 o'clock, depending on where you live. You come outside the mall and the parking lot's a little bit more abandoned than you thought, and you have a feeling. You know, I think what people don't realize is that a lot of people have these probably feelings, and they have that gut feeling something's wrong, and a lot of times they just kind of go against that, and the bravado kicks in, and they go, "Oh, I'm gonna do it anyway." I mean, if you get that, just as a before we get into the actual parking lot scenario, if you kind of get that gut feeling, you kind of feeling that something's not right, you know, you should probably consider that. Would you think, Richard? I mean, is that something that you teach in your training?
Absolutely, we do. We have this rule of thumb, and it's a coincidence isn't a coincidence until it's proven to be a coincidence, right? Intuition is there for a reason. There's a reason that we have that heightened sense of alertness when we're in a bad situation. And that's not to say sometimes we're overthinking it because of anxiety, stress, or whatever is going on, but you should always listen to it first. In the military, there was a perfect example. It was if you were inside of a building, a compound, right? We're raiding a compound, and you see what you think is an explosive device. Whether you're wrong or not, you call that out, right? If that intuition is telling you that thing is a dangerous, if there's something in here that's going to explode, even if you don't see an explosive device, but you have something telling you something in there is going to explode. Maybe it's a ringing, or you felt a board creak weird, whatever it is, you call that out and everybody gets out. Now, yeah, you might have been wrong, but what happens if you were right and you didn't call it, right? Same thing in this situation. If your intuition is telling you it's an abandoned parking lot, you're getting a feeling like something's wrong, a shady guy in a hood is walking your direction. There's a reason that intuition is telling you that, right? Because your body is telling you it senses danger, and you should treat it that way. You should treat it like danger until you can prove it's not.
Yeah, let's hope we're never in that situation. And if you're in firearm restricted states or counties, a good old can of mace never really hurt anybody to have if they're trying to defend themselves. I mean, I know that there's maybe folklore that some people can reject that if you spray them in the face with mace. I guess over training, you probably train your body to do much anything. But I would suppose that 99.999% of the population aren't going to stick around if you spray them in the eye with mace for sure. Would you say,
Right.
is that the type of, or a stun gun or something? If you're in a restrictive state, what do you think is a backup weapon?
If you don't have, I always would say, obviously, to go with a firearm, it is the equalizer, you know, for especially for females who are smaller in stature, right? You could mace somebody. What if you miss? Right? There's the possibility that that person is moved so quick on you that the mace is hitting them and it's not really doing anything because it's on their shirt or whatever. They're going to cough or whatever. But if their intent is to harm you, chances are they're going to continue to harm you. If you have nothing at all, then you're wrong. You should always have something, whether it be mace or a stun gun. Again, with the stun gun, you know what, you have to run that risk of, am I going to hit them with it? Am I going to? One of the best tools, I think, if you can't have a firearm, is a knife. And there's a reason, a knife that you know how to use. But there's a reason, because a knife is a static weapon, right? Meaning you don't have to be dynamic with a knife to poke somebody. In fact, as soon as I have that knife open, I'll use the pencil as an example. That person decides to wrap around me and move into me. Who's getting stabbed? That person. I never even had to poke them with it, right? And so that knife can be an extremely valuable tool, especially if you know how to use it, because there's a lot of damage and a lot of people, as we know, in the countries without firearms, you see how well people use knives. There's a lot of damage that can be done with a knife, especially if you know how to use it. And so I would say, you know, if you can't have that, you need to have a lethal weapon that it's not going to equal the firearm, but pretty darn close when it comes to those close proximity engagements, especially for a small woman. A knife will equalize a fight very, very quickly, especially if you know how to use it. Obviously, somebody without training that has a weapon, you're running the risk of getting hurt very bad or getting it taken from you.
Wow, Corey, you've been haven't said anything. Wow, wait. I mean, this is fascinating stuff. I mean,
It is. I'm enjoying this.
it really is very good practical stuff. I mean, things you don't really even, you know, you don't think about these things, because no one wants to sit around, Richard, as we know. I mean, no one wants to sit around thinking about, you know, dangerous scenarios and, you know, being attacked at the mall. People want to think good thoughts and positive things, you know, especially people that are trying to make better parts, you know, make the world better. But as a fact of the matter is, you know, we can't physically train through all of these scenarios, but we at least have to mentally, I guess, try to always put ourselves and maybe do mental exercises. I mean, a couple, I don't know. Is there, go ahead.
Mental exercises, but also, you know, it might be wise for people to take self-defense class, you know, go to spend some time at the shooting range, even take a class there. You know,
absolutely. Absolutely. 100%. You should be out there training, you know, at the end of the day, even if you have no intent to work in any career field related to it. I always say to guys that come through, they're like, well, what if I don't want to work in EP? I say, well, then at the end of the day, who are you protecting? Either yourself or your family. You're still doing that job. You're just doing it now for yourself. So you should know how to do it, right? Just like medicine or anything else, you should have the ability to defend yourself with and without a firearm. That being said, there are plenty of places that offer invaluable training when it comes to that. One of the best tools is, you know, as much many people know, excuse me, jiu-jitsu. And I, you know, hopefully you don't mind me doing this plug, but there's a gym that I go to here that is just fantastic. It's SBJ in Whitefish, but they have them in Kalispell and Big Fork and all over. It's an international gym. But, you know, any gym you can get to, get in there and do jiu-jitsu. Get in there and do striking. Learn what it's like to get hit in the face. You know, that's part of, I'm an MMA fighter. Amateur. I've been training for years, and I thoroughly enjoy it. I do jiu-jitsu, I do boxing, wrestling, you know, all of it. And I'm telling you the difference when you walk in there. And, you know, I came from a special operations unit thinking I was the bee's knees, and I walked in that gym and I was humbled so quick. It was unreal. And it's one of the best parts about it is you get a realization of what really happens in real life versus the nonsense you see in the movies or that you hear on the streets and stuff like that, you know. I got really lucky with the guys I trained with. Some of them were UFC, Bellator, PFL fighters. You know, shout out to Dan Spong, Travis Davis, and Harry Johnson. That's actually what he goes by. Excuse it. These guys were phenomenal fighters, but they, you know, I learned really quick, you know, how it really feels to get punched in the face by somebody who's intending to harm you. And that's something, an invaluable tool, just like shooting on the range and doing it under a stressful situation. I can't, you know, if you don't go to any other shooting course, I can't implore it enough to people, stop standing still and shooting at a standing still target. That is not how the world works, right? Don't get me wrong. There are lessons to be learned in that. You can work on a lot of good drills to get better trigger work, et cetera. But you need to be able to shoot under stress because that's what's going to really happen in real life. So you need to have these skill sets, both of them. And a lot of people focus on those hard, we call them hard skills, right? So they focus on the shooting and on the fighting, and they're good fighters and they're good shooters, but then they're missing the part that we didn't discuss yet. And that's the medical. They're missing that medical part and they don't even know how to do basic medicine on themselves. So as soon as they're injured, they're out of the fight.
Ooh, yeah. So let's get into that.
Yeah. First aid kits and things like that. Is that what you're talking about? Having
yeah.
What did you have in mind, Corey? I was thinking that, but go ahead.
I just take being able to do medical and take care of yourself. I expand on that.
Yeah. Right. Cause that sounds important. I think
absolutely you should, you know, a rule of thumb for me is I always have a med kit wherever I'm going. If it's in my vehicle, it's got to be in my vehicle with me. When I'm with a client, I always have a med kit on me, some form of med kit, right? And that, you know, there's a lot of med kits out there, plenty of guys out there with repertoire that could back it up, that they'll give you the advice on which med kit to get and how to set it up. But more than that, you need the training on how to use the items in that med kit, right? One of the biggest things that kills people on the battlefield in real life is massive hemorrhaging. And a lot of these situations could have been stopped had the person known how to put on a tourniquet, right? And so you need to know not just how to put a tourniquet on someone else, but more importantly, how to put a tourniquet on yourself. You need to know how to stop a massive bleed. You need to know how to plug a bullet wound or a cut or a scratch or, you know, it's not all related to combat. You might be in a survival situation, fall down, and you find a piece of rebar in your leg. You know, there, you have to be able to splint things. You have to be able to do tactical medicine on yourself and on other people. If not, then at the end of the day, you're kind of useless to yourself in that situation. Then it takes you out of the gunfight, and not useless that you're useless, if that makes sense. But as far as protecting yourself, if it takes you out of the gunfight or takes you out of the ability to help the team in a survival situation, now you become a detriment to the team.
Yeah.
So where do people, what's the best place or best way for people to learn how to do these things?
In my opinion, the best way is to go to the people who do it there. And, you know, we have guys at our company, that teach, that have been, involved in tactical medicine. There are plenty of guys out there that do tactical medicine that are very good at it, that know how to interact with people in a way that gets them excited about it and helps them understand it. But they're also learning with the materials and the devices that are realistic. So sometimes they'll use live organs to show you how the organs work and what really happens under these situations. And sometimes they're using devices that, present you with a real bleed that you have to actually stop, and it's not going to stop until you do it the right way. And so this type of training, short of having a body or an animal in front of you and doing it, which you couldn't do, is as valuable as it gets, when it comes to medicine. So, you have guys that are very good at this, that own companies all across the United States. We have one that works for us for, he has his own company, Remote Access Medical. His name's Adam Mack. So he teaches that out in Washington, and then he goes out and does remote access rescues on people from,
Oh, wow.
injuries to people who are frozen or stuff like that. John Crowley is a guy. He's a Navy veteran who saved two Marines when they got blown up while he was blown up at the same time. And he got has a company. Fantastic guy. I'll send you guys his fantastic company. I've seen him do the work. But there are plenty of resources out there. I mean, really, really invaluable resources with guys who have a plethora of experience, more than I could hope for, in tactical medicine and in field craft medicine.
Now, is this something where, when you say there's tons of companies, is this something where you could say, hey, we're going to get a bunch of people together, either family, friends, or town, or a company, and say, hey, can we, hire you for a day to come in and teach us this, or how does that work?
Absolutely. That's exactly what they do.
Okay.
They look, a lot of times they'll have government contracts too. And they'll have, private citizens who are interested. That's what our company does. We have private citizens that are interested in the weapons training or the driving, the shooting through the vehicle, whatever it may be, and medical. And so they come to us and that's what they say. Hey, can we have this many people, we want a day's worth of medical training on this. And then we provide them with as much as we can for that time.
Very cool.
So should everybody just before we're going to move inside the house here, should everybody, to close up this, to put a bow on this, as the saying goes, everybody should probably at least, would you suggest, take a basic CPR course on how to perform CPR? That would be a pretty good foundation. I know the stuff you're talking about, putting splints on and tying off tourniquets, is not in any of your CPR course, but at least you'll have some basics. Is that something that you would agree with?
I would say you're more likely to have to stop a bleed than CPR. CPR is fantastic to have, but the likelihood of stopping a bleed in that in the end of the ward or a survival or any of those situations would be more likely than CPR. You should always have CPR, but if you can get the stop the bleed cert with it, and those two, it's not expensive, it's inexpensive. There are a lot of people who get offered. It's the same as the CPR course. It's a short course, a day long
It's
max, it's
called
6 hours.
Stop the Bleed. That's literally the name of the course. Stop the
Yep,
Bleed.
stop the bleed.
Huh. Okay.
It's a very cut and dry. It's focused mostly on, again, stopping hemorrhaging, massive hemorrhaging. So it's simple, it's cut and dry, but it's very educational. And if you're
Yeah.
going to have nothing at all, I'd have that and the CPR.
Yeah. No kidding, man. Maybe we'll get a group together and fly you guys out here. Oh, you're already out here.
I
What are you
want
doing?
to come. Yeah, let us know. We love doing it.
Okay, so let's move inside the house here if we can. We've got oh, I don't know, right around 15 minutes or so here before we end the podcast. Let's move inside the house. People, of course, feel safer in their home than anywhere else. They're familiar with their home. If something's out of place, they have a little better, they can pick it up and pretty quickly. A lot of people, as I suggest, have dogs, which I think is key, I believe, to your home defense, is have a dog. The meaner and more rotten the dog you can have, the better, as far as I'm concerned. And there's certain things you can do as far as the perimeter. So let's do that. Let's use that same formula if we can. Let's start on the outside of the house and move inside the house. So we talked about, I think you mentioned in the pre-interview, a fence. That may be the first line of defense for someone that maybe live in a neighborhood that, it's kind of dicey. Maybe the crime's not really bad yet, but you can kind of see the trend going that way. You've seen it happen before. You can't really afford to pick up everything and move because that's, a lot of expenses and you got work and everything. So let's start, if we can, on the outside. You talk about a fence. What kind of fence is it? Just like a, not your regular backyard chain link fence. You want to get some sort of a privacy fence or something that's a little bit more formidable. So let's start on the outside if we can and just move to the interior of the house, if that's okay with you, Richard.
Right, absolutely. You definitely want to start with, if you can, right? This is all what you're financially capable of. But if you have the means to, you certainly want to have some sort of fence, like you said, a privacy fence that's going to block off and be high enough to keep people from being able to look over. And now a lot of people are going to say, well, that's not going to stop somebody who really wants to come in and jump over. No, it won't. If somebody wants to get through that fence, the likelihood of them doing so is pretty high, right? If they're going to jump over it or whatever. At the most, it's a deterrent. And it's a good deterrent at that. For the most part, people see that fence and they think, okay, there's something in there this person doesn't want me to have. This person is taking the time to put up a fence. I probably shouldn't go in there, right? It's blocked off. There's no reason. But there's always going to be that curious or that dangerous person who says, I don't care about the fence, right? And so that's when, like you said, you need to have some sort of other form of alarm system or alert system to let you know that person's there or to engage that person prior to you. A dog is a perfect example. Especially like you said, in a big dog that's aggressive when it knows when to be aggressive, right? It knows when to alert on an intruder. It'll bark, it'll bite, it'll do its job, if that makes sense. It'll let you know, it'll alert you to a presence so that you know you're not opening your door and there's a guy standing there with a firearm or whatever it may be. If you can, I always say it depends on how worried I am of the threat, right? If I could choose my property perfectly, I'd be on an elevated location that also for some reason had running water, well water, and all kinds of stuff, you know. But ideally, that's what I would like to have. But if you can't have that, then it wouldn't harm to have deterrence also from your windows, from things like that. When I'm talking about hardening an area, if I'm given advice when it comes to interacting with a government agency or something like that, if they're asking, hey, how should I harden this specific target? Homeland Security was one of the courses I took in pursuing my degree. It was area hard or hardening a specific area, right? Whether it be a government facility, a data server container, whatever it is. And one of the first things you think about, okay, is what's the threat to somebody trying to harm me through a window, right? But if I think that that's a possibility, then I'll do something like put a tree in front of that window. I'll grow a deterrent so that you can't naturally see through my window. And I think trees on a property are very important because it creates that degree of separation from someone having direct line of sight to you. And you know, if somebody really knows what they're doing, chances are they're gonna look to engage you from a distance or to keep, you know, that self-preservation. They're not gonna try and it's not the movies, you know, that's not how real life works. Nobody's gonna knock on your door, stand outside and wait till you both count to 10 to draw at high noon. That's just not how the world works. Somebody really wants to get you, they're probably gonna do it in a very sneaky way. On top of that, there are little perimeter defense things that can really, you know, help you. So avenues of approach, right? Having a line of sight to your avenue of approach, a natural line of approach to your property, right? If I can see directly to my driveway and I have the ability to see everything coming up to my driveway, that's pretty important as opposed to being in a house where my back is to the driveway and I can't see it. Things like that are super important. If you already have that location set, then you can set up things called perimeter detection devices. That can be anything from a camera that alerts you immediately to motion. What I would suggest is have one that runs on a separate battery or Wi-Fi together. That way, if the Wi-Fi goes down, you can use that separate battery, but also be familiar with how Wi-Fi needs to be set up. That goes into a whole nother plethora of securing yourself in the digital data
And you
sphere.
want bright lights coming on, right? Don't you want bright
Bright
lights
light.
coming
If
on
you have,
as much as you can afford if you can get good light system?
if you can have a good light system, you absolutely want to be able to illuminate the area and see. You know, again, this comes back onto what you can financially afford. So if you can, you want to be able to light that thing up like the 4th of July, to be able to see everything, and also to be able to, you know, at nighttime, especially for a person approaching, that's terribly blinding to have a bright light shine right at your face, the person behind it able to see you to do whatever. You have perimeter defense devices that can, it can be something as simple as a $10 device that is set up so that it sets off a shotgun round that doesn't actually have any round in it, but the powder. And, you know, you hear a shotgun round go off if somebody trips
Wow.
that.
Wait, flesh that out.
That's
What do
cool.
they have? Come again? Like
So
a motion detector that's a like a shotgun round?
you tie it off. You can tie it off with invisible fishing lure line, you know, however many pounds. You should probably want to use a light poundage so that it rips, but not too light so that you break it instead of pulling the device. Very simple metal device that has a sheet of metal inside of it. When that sheet of metal pulls, it drops a firing pin and that hits the shotgun round and sets it off. 10 to $50, depending on the company you buy it from. And then the little shotgun dummy rounds themselves sound super loud. It creates a real loud shotgun bang, but without sending any projectile.
That's
And then
really
people turn
cool.
around and they turn around and then the flashing lights come on, they start flashing, and
Right.
people turn around and hightail out of there.
Nice.
Now,
The strobe. You're just strobing
yeah,
them.
right on. Hey, oh man,
that's
no kidding.
awesome.
That is pretty cool. That
I
is
had
pretty
gotten something years
cool.
ago. I had a really long, it was like a 200-foot long driveway. And I had gotten, it was really inexpensive, but I can't remember what it was called, but it was like on each side of my driveway, it was like a sensor. So if anyone pulled in or walked up the driveway, it would beep inside my house and alert me. And there was no Wi-Fi involved, I don't believe.
It's a radio frequency.
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah,
And that was
typically
really
those are
inexpensive.
RF. Yeah, absolutely. And they're, you can't, I mean, they're invaluable. So little devices like that, you know, are invaluable.
Yeah.
Because it comes down to what you talked earlier about surprise. You don't want them having the element of surprise on you. You want to be able to have the element of surprise on them if they're coming to harm you. I mean, you don't want to go around,
Absolutely.
I mean, obviously actively doing this. We're just saying in defensively, in a defensive situation, you don't want them to know that you know they're coming. You want the surprise to be
Right.
on your side.
And
Right.
what
You
was
want to.
this? I'm sorry. I was just going to ask, what was the specific name of the one that does the shotgun?
It's a perimeter defense device. If, I'll have to get back to you. It's, I can't think of it right now off the top of my head, but if you type in perimeter defense shotgun round, I'm almost positive it'll show up.
Okay,
It's a very
cool.
simple device, but I will get back with you and I'll make sure to email it to you. It's just, I can't think of it right
Oh
now.
yeah,
There's
that's
another
okay.
one that's another tool for in the house that is super invaluable. Obviously you want to have locks on the windows, on the doors, stuff like that. You want to be able to know if someone's going to break in. And the dog, I always encourage to have a dog in the house too, because if somebody does, for some reason, the dog outside, I've seen it before, a dog be asleep. And, you know, in the military, we've seen it. We're walking up on a house after landing a helicopter and the dog's still asleep, right? So sometimes that happens.
After landing a helicopter, the dog is still
Typically, we're typically an
asleep.
offset. It's typically a good distance away.
Right
But
on.
you can imagine, right? You just landed out, there's 20 of you. You got green eyes and you're all stumbling around trying not to make noise, but you got so much stuff on you that you're just scraping walls and everything. And the dog's still sitting there sleeping.
Wow.
Funny. That's
It's
funny.
not common. For the most part, they like to wake up and bark at you and trying to let them know that you're there. But it's definitely happened where the dog must have had a good meal or was just all tired from the sun and didn't wake up.
Great.
And so
that's the kind of
go
dog
ahead. You were
that's the kind
talking
of
about
dog I would be. That's the kind of dog I would be if I
yeah.
was
I
going
think I'd be probably the same dog. I like my sleep. So you have, you know, you a dog in the house is invaluable, especially if it's trained, right? You want to, again, you want to have the training. It comes down to training a lot with everything. Having a firearm without having training is almost useless. You know, it can't help you, but in the most part, you're probably going to harm yourself or someone else without needing to. You want to get good training on everything. There's another device I like to use inside the house. It's a pressure pad. It's this little black pad that you can put under a doormat or under the windowsill. And you don't know it's there. You can't see it. It's attached to a little battery pack that no one can see. It's very easy to conceal and hide. And if you're breaking into a house at night, you won't see it. You step on it and it releases the most god-awful decibel screeching that you've ever heard. And talk about the element of surprise. That'll get somebody off the rocker. We use it on our students sometimes to make sure they're paying attention when they're entering and exiting certain places to make sure that the client is safe during training. And I tell you to watch the shock on their face when that thing goes off and to see the time it takes for them to react is it's hilarious, but it's also a very valuable tool. And it's also a good way to alert yourself that someone's in your home.
And what's that one called?
It's a pressure pad alarm system.
Okay.
Wow.
Interesting.
Wow.
And there are a lot of good companies. You can even find them on Amazon.
And you know, the way I like to think about some of the stuff you're talking about is you remember the club? I think they still have it. The club that you tie off to your, I guess, your brake, and then you tie off to your steering wheel and you put it in your car, and
Yep.
it's called the club, right? You've seen the
Right.
commercials a long time ago. So could people break through and get a car still if it had the club? I've been told yes, they could, but you know what? They just move on to the next one that's not so difficult. So if you got, you know, perimeter defense, big long, big a big wall, a dog, lights going off, the shotgun thing, people are just gonna avoid your house. They're just gonna go to the next house that's easier to get into and to break into that doesn't have all these perimeter alarms. Would you agree with that one?
Yeah, ideally, all of these are deterrents. You never actually have to use them for their purpose. Hopefully, you should train on them all the time. Train with your family, drill in your house, all this stuff. Drill clearing the house, drill how your family should react should this happen, what to do if this happens, different scenarios. But ideally, that is the entire point of them is that somebody is going to walk by, see that you have these big dogs, like you said, see this big fence, see these lights, and say, no, I'm not going to mess with that guy. I'm going to go to the guy who decided not to defend himself, not to take the necessary precautions. I'm going to go to what is a weaker person. They're going to look at, I call it soft targets. The military does too. I'm going to go to a softer target. This one's been hardened. This is a dangerous target. And you know, that goes on. There's surveillance and everything. Anytime somebody has ever committed a crime or an act of hostility or whatever, in most cases, they've performed surveillance prior to, whether it's robbing a gas station, right? They look to see if there's cameras. The smallest form of surveillance, but they do it. Same thing with your property.
Now, what about the situation like we've seen over the past few years, where people would be rioting in neighborhoods and you got a mob coming down the street and they're coming up on your lawn and they look like they're starting to encroach on your house, and maybe they've definitely broken into a lot of retail places. So what do you do in a situation like that if you're standing inside your home and you see this mob of people coming down the street and they're
Yeah, that great question. If they're coming, right, if we have the time to get out of the situation, the best thing is to get out of the situation, right? Nothing in your house is going to be worth your life. Your house itself isn't going to be worth your life. That being said, if you can't get out of the situation, if they're not moving towards you actively, right, pretend like you're not there. Don't give them anybody to try and pick on. If they have seen you and you see them moving onto your property or attempting to move onto your property, do not, you see the videos of the people coming out onto the lawn with the firearms. I wouldn't recommend doing that. You're exposing yourself to too much, right? At any
Right.
point in time, when your back's turned talking to another person, someone else could have shot you, thrown something at you, harmed you in some way. I would say use the safety of cover and concealment as much as possible in your house and you're, perfectly within your grounds. If you want to, it's going to be on you what you want to do. But I would warn, I would make it very clear, hey, you will be shot if you do this. If you do this, right? Make it very clear you don't want to harm them, that you're not happy about the situation. But you definitely don't want to let them onto your property or into your home or give them the ability to harm you. As much as you can make it appear like you're not there and they need to move on to the next house, do that. But again, if you can't avoid that, if the confrontation is happening, then go ahead and set the grounds for that confrontation and use the cover and concealment you already have, if that makes sense. Don't come out of your house looking to get in a gunfight.
Yeah, right.
If a gunfight
Don't.
has to happen, use your environment to your advantage.
Yeah, don't initiate it. Don't
And then
initiate
what hap but what happens if they break into the house and they're
it. That
causing
was
the ruckus in multiple houses, and now
yeah.
that now you got like 10 people flown into your house at once?
In that case, I would always say maintain the high ground. If you have high ground stairs, something like that, always stay on that high ground. You should have already alerted the police. You should be making these calls. At the end of the day, the police are there to respond, right? They don't stop the crime in most instances. They react to it. And we know that it's not a knock towards the police. They do the best they can, but they're always a phone call away at the very least. So how much time is that? I can tell you with someone else having a firearm or just beating up on you, it doesn't take a long time to kill or harm you at all. And so if that's the instance, if they've come into your home, they are pushing on you to harm you, then that's when you're going to have to make that choice. And I have to defend myself and defend my life, as horrible and as miserable as that might be. You have to make that decision. That's the time to act. It's the time to start engaging the threat. That being said, if you do run into that situation, one, you should probably have something like USCCA to cover you. If you defend yourself with a gun, I can promise you there's going to be a criminal lawsuit, which most of the time, if you're justified, you'll win. And then there's the civil lawsuit afterwards, and that's the one that's really going to kick you in the junk, because the amount of money it's going to cost, stuff like that, if you don't have the insurance on it, you're going to be in some trouble, right? That being said, if someone is trying to harm you, you definitely are in the right, in my opinion. If they're trying to kill you and you've done nothing wrong, especially if they come onto your property to harm you, that person deserves to get smoked, and it's your job to smoke them, because if you don't, they're going to kill you, right? That's the sad reality of it. It sucks. You don't want to do it. But at the end of the day, you want to be there for your kids. You want to be there for your girlfriend or your spouse, your wife, whoever it is, your husband. You want to make sure you're there for them too. So, in that instance, I would say defend yourself as much as necessary. Don't shoot somebody in the back. If somebody's running away, don't shoot them. We have a different set of rules in the military. One of the rules is if you've walked past a body, you can't turn back around and shoot it, right?
Right.
So you shoot
Now,
it. You shoot it. You make sure you shoot it enough when you're by it so that it doesn't keep moving. But in that instance, what I mean is if somebody's crawling away from you, they've dropped their firearm, something like that, and somebody, you got to consider it's the day of recording. Everybody has a phone. Always act as if you're being recorded. If you can't justify that that person was a threat and why you killed them, you will probably be in trouble. So always remember, don't shoot somebody who's running away. If they're leaving, if they're not a threat to you anymore, do not shoot them. If that person is firing a firearm at you, shoot them. Right.
right,
There's a big
don't
right.
execute folks. Don't execute folks is what you're saying,
Exactly.
right?
What
Exactly.
was the insurance called that you said?
I believe it's USCCA. They offer so in that instance, it's a lot of it is self-defense firearm. I want to make sure I get this right. Most people are familiar with it, that are firearm like enthusiasts. If you know anybody that is big into firearms, they probably have it. I have the coverage. It's like, I want to say mine's like $25 a month, but it affords you an attorney. It affords you, people who have dealt with these cases over and over again. I'm doing a little bit of a plug for them, but I don't work for them or anything like that, so I won't get anything back for it. I just really like what they're doing because it does protect the gun owner if they have to go. I mean, it's horrible enough that you had to use a firearm against somebody, that you had to take another human life. That's god awful.
Right.
The last thing you want to do is spend years in litigation paying money and possibly losing a civil lawsuit because somebody doesn't understand that your life was important to you.
Right.
That's excellent advice, and we're just going to have to close out this podcast. That was a fascinating po I mean, I'm telling you, I could have went on for like another 2 hours. I mean, like, and I think you
Right.
just scratched the surface because some of the stuff in the sheet here, you said I'll go into it more. We didn't even have a chance to go into it. So, I mean, it's a fascinating journey that you just took us on here for the last hour. Richard, we do appreciate you being here. Is there anything that you would like to say before we close out the podcast? Then we'll go over to Corey and she can have her final words if she likes. Richard?
Yeah, absolutely. I want to say thank you very much for giving me the opportunity to come on. I really enjoy this stuff. I enjoy talking about it. And like I said, I'm one for this last bit of my life. I've dedicated it to it since the military to it because I really enjoy it, and I want people to be able to help themselves, defend themselves, to protect their family. I think we all know where the world's heading, so that's why it's important. I'd like to plug my company, SVS Protective Solutions.
Sure, of
If you want to
course.
follow us on Instagram at SVS underscore Protective underscore Solutions. And a big shout out to SBG, Straight Blast Gym and Whitefish and in Kalispell, Big Fork, everywhere they own. Get out there and learn how to use your weapon. Get out there and learn how to drive your vehicle. Get out there and learn how to react in bad situations with your family and by yourself. Get out there and learn how to defend yourself specifically. Go take a defensive class. Go take a medical class. All these things are super important. We offer a lot of them. We work with people financially because we know it's a tight world right now with everything going on. We're more than willing to work with people, but there are a plethora of companies that have a lot more experience or are really good at what they do. So those are options too. But don't sit around and wait till it's happening to try and figure out what to do. Thank you guys again.
Well put, well put. Miss Corey, would you like to say anything?
Yeah, no, I just wanted to thank you for coming on. This was fantastic. And like James said, we definitely could have gone another hour or two. Very important information. This was a great episode.
Indeed, it was a great episode, folks. And it's just at the end, and everything has to, every all good things have to come to an end, unfortunately. And this is true about this podcast as well. We do appreciate all the support and all the kind emails and comments about the Solution Series. And you can find out more by going to coreysdigs.com or solari.com. And we do appreciate you looking in here. And we want to thank our guest, Richard Murford, and all his great information. And for my co-host, Corey Lynn, this is James White from the Solution Series saying bye now.